Reed, thank you for taking the lead on this week's podcast. I don't know whether this is going to be the last episode of 2024 or the first episode of 2025, but in any event, Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you too. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. I'm Reed Martin, co-artistic director of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, now in its 19th year, number 943, Threading the Needle.
So much fun to hear those words spoken by somebody else.
Yes, so I wanted to talk to you this week about your last three holiday seasons, where you have been playing Scrooge at the Goodman Theater in Chicago, the main regional theater in the second city, and what that is all like. So tell us first, what is your title Alternate Scrooge, like Alternate Girlfriend? No, what's Altered? Is it Alternate Scrooge?
No, that is absolutely my title, Alternate Scrooge. And as my agent has explained to me, that's different than being an understudy. It doesn't necessarily mean anything different in terms of equity rules or compensation, but the distinction is I'm the alternate in the sense that I get 10 of my own guaranteed performances, which is fantastic. You know, I get paid the same either way, whether I'm on or off. But then I get 10 of my own guaranteed performances, but I have to be at the theater for every performance to cover the primary Scrooge, or as I like to call him, my alternate Scrooge.
So you get 10. How many performances of the show are there in the season?
There are 54. 54 performances in a season, and this was my third year. And historically, what they have done is that when a cast member or a crew member does 4 years of the show, they've done over 200 performances, and so the Goodman presents them with a silver frame in recognition of 200 performances of A Christmas Carol, and I'm hoping A, that they'll have me back next year for year four, and that B, if I do get that engraved frame, there's not an asterisk by 200 because I will have only performed Scrooge, you know, a quarter of those times, maybe close to 40 times. I guess a fifth of those times. But I've had, as people have explained to me, since I have to be there, I've been there for all the performances. So that counts.
Well, that's interesting because I've understudied various times, and sometimes they require you to be there. Sometimes they just require you to be within driving distance. You call in at half hour, and they require you to be within a half an hour so you could get there and get on the stage. So what do you do? Well, I've got two questions. Let me back up. Why do they have an alternate Scrooge instead of an understudy?
Well, they'd always had an understudy Scrooge, somebody understudying the role, but they never designated an official alternate until the previous Scrooge, Larry Yando, who ultimately played the role for like 16 or 17 years, somewhere about after his 10th year, he said, you know, I don't want to do all 54 performances. Could we get somebody in here who will take some of that load off? And so the alternate Scrooge was born. And there's only been three of them, I think. I'm the third of them.
Over how long a period of time?
In about 10 years, 10 or 11 years, there's been, and so I've been the third of them. My previous alternate Scrooge, Alan Gilmore, has appeared on the podcast because he was in a production of Scrooge and Sherlock, a play about the meetings of those two famous fictional characters. And also now he's playing Ebenezer Scrooge in the Hartford stage production of Christmas Carol. And we saw him play the fool to André de Shields' King Lear at the St. Louis Shakespeare. He's a phenomenal actor, Alan. But so that's how the alternate Scrooge was born.
And so have you gone on? So you go, it's sometimes they have alternates because there's more than 8 shows a week during the holidays, and actors, according to Actors Equity, it gets complicated if you do more than, but do you ever do more than 8 performances? Does the show ever do more than 8 performances in a week?
Yes. This year it was weird because Christmas and New Year's fall on a Wednesday in the middle of the week. So the lead up to Christmas Eve, they did 11 performances in 8 days. And typically an actor's work week is 8 performances in 6 days. Because if you work 7 days straight, then they need to pay you, not overtime, but they need to compensate you in a way. And if you perform an extra performance on an 8th day, that's 2 days at prorated. I think it's 2/7 of your weekly salary. You get that as a bonus for doing those extra performances. Weirdly, in this 11 show, 8 day build up to Christmas Eve, I only did one of those performances early on. And then, and so the Christopher Donahue, who has also appeared on the podcast a couple weeks ago, he did one, and then I did one, and then he did the next 11 minus 2, he did the next 9 in a row. I mean, it's, and playing Scrooge, it's a full load. You never leave the stage. During this show, only at intermission do you get to have a break, have pee, and get water.
Well, and clearly the theater is making money if they're willing to pay extra for these extra shows. I mean, so many theaters do a Christmas Carol or some Christmas show as a way to sort of underwrite the rest of the season.
Yeah, and the Goodman has phenomenal resources. I mean, they won a Tony. They've done so many world premieres. All of their shows sell very well, and are quite good typically. I'm always surprised because the previews for Christmas Carol begin the week before Thanksgiving, which always seems so early to me to be doing Christmas Carol. I think, oh well, the audiences will slowly build, but they're full from the beginning. Sunday nights are typically sell less well. Weirdly, that's also I typically do the Sunday night performances. I'm not sure whether causation where that falls. It sells really well. And as you say, this is the 47th year of this production of Christmas Carol at the Goodman. And they tweak it every year. Every year it's a little different. New actors, new music, something. It's basically the same story. But it's a tradition, and the Goodman walks that line really well of making tiny incremental changes, but not wholesale changes, because they've got audience members who have come to this show for generations. They came as children, and they are now bringing their children, and in some cases their grandchildren, to this performance. And it's gratifying to me, because particularly when I go on a night when I'm not scheduled to go on, people will go, wait, that's not the guy. But then I'll go out. I typically have friends and or family coming to those performances, and I'll go out to the lobby to get my fans, and people will come up to me delighted and going, you were really good.
I'm shocked.
Well, I know, I'm
with a generational production of A Christmas Carol at ACT, San Francisco, American Conservatory Theater, which was written by, I think, by Laird Williamson and directed, I think, by Bill Ball. Anyway, and the great Sidney Walker was often the Scrooge, and he was amazing. So, yeah, and they've changed their Christmas Carol since then. And I'm not sure the new ones have been as successful as that original one. So, man, the Goodman is probably onto something. You mentioned going on when you weren't expecting. You're not only the alternate Scrooge, but you're the understudy Scrooge. Yeah. How often do you get called in at the last minute to say, oh, you're on?
This year I got called in twice. I got called in to do a matinee because Chris wasn't feeling well. But the expectation was that he would do the evening show. And that makes sense, whatever. Even if he just wanted to take a morning off, I have no problem with that going, you know what, do it. It's a win-win. right? You know, he gets time off. I get another go at it, because this is maybe one of the frustrations of being the alternate Scrooge. I'm sorry to divulge from the direction of your question, but one of the frustrations is that I don't, particularly with a new main Scrooge this year, he got all the rehearsal time. When Larry Endo was the Scrooge, I got a ton of rehearsal time, because it's like, I know it. I've been doing it for over a decade. But this year, I got very little rehearsal time. And in fact, the day of my put-in and first performance was the first time I had said some of those lines on stage this year in 10 months.
Sounds like an RSC performance, except the first time we say it is when the curtain goes up.
Well, that was exactly it. And so my rehearsals, in air quotes, are with an audience. These are the only times I get to play and figure out how my performance is going to go. Now, after 3 years, I kind of know what I'm doing. But the new guy, Chris, and several new actors this year changed it up a little bit. And I was able to, my job as both an understudy and an alternate is to honor the performance that I'm covering and stick to that timing a little bit and give not only the audience, but the fellow actors and the crew members the timing that they're expecting to give their performances. So
are you trying to, how much are you able to make it your own, if at all, or are you basically trying to be imitating him as closely as you can so as not to throw off everybody else?
Well, that's the needle that I have to thread, is giving the audience and the other company members what they expect in a performance of Ebenezer Scrooge in this performance, and finding a way to make it my own. So I have my own views of Christopher and I talked about our views of Scrooge a little bit. We mostly focused on his in our conversation a couple of weeks ago. And I have a different view of Scrooge than he does. But Scrooge is a great role, and it's open to so many interpretations. So I definitely do it a little faster than both of my Scrooges that I've alternated with.
RSC influence.
Get in, get the laugh, humbug, get out. But also, I want to honor Chris's performance. I want to make it my own where I can. But I am also haunted by Scrooge's past. You know, not only of Scrooge's I've seen and loved, but Larry Yando's performance. There's one or two moments of his that I've kept because they work. And I haven't had the opportunity in rehearsal or performance to find my own version of that. There's a whole bunch of places where I do things different and they work for me. And I've stolen some stuff from Chris because, oh, I'll have that, because this thing that he's doing, I can do. But he does so much that I couldn't, even if I wanted to copy what he did, I couldn't do it. It wouldn't work for me. You know, it's not part of who I am as an actor or who my Scrooge is.
Hi, I'm Guy Roberts, Artistic Director of Prague Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? This March of 2025, we'll return to the Merrimack Repertory Theater in Lowell, Massachusetts for the 3-week Lort Theater premiere of the comedy of Hamlet, a prequel. And in April and May of 2025, we're bringing back an updated version of All the Great Books Abridged and performing it in Bristol, Tennessee, Harrisonburg, Virginia, Louisville, Kentucky, Elyria, Ohio, Bloomsbury, Pennsylvania, and Rhinelander, Wisconsin. Check out the touring page at our website, ReducedShakespeare.com, or our social media pages for venue and ticket information. And now back to Reed Martin's conversation with me. And if you're a new listener and don't know who I am, I'm Austin Titchener, Reed's RSC co-artistic director, talking about being the alternate Ebenezer Scrooge in A Christmas Carol at Chicago's Goodman Theater for the third year in a row.
How much does the company, so 47 years in a row, this is now your third year, how much company turnover is there, and how many weeks rehearsal do you get? I mean, typically in a professional, you know, setting, you might get 3 to 5 weeks of rehearsal for a production from scratch.
Yeah.
How much rehearsal does, how many new people each year, roughly? I know it would be different year to year, and how much rehearsal?
It's typically about a month of rehearsal before we go into tech. 4 weeks of rehearsal this year, because there were 5 new principal actors. There was a new Scrooge, a new Bob Cratchit, a new narrator, a new Jacob Marley, and a new Christmas present. They added an extra week of rehearsals. Now, interestingly, this is fascinating from a business standpoint, because you and I are the business owners of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, so this is fascinating. So they brought in the entire company for the first day of this extra week, and then put most of us on leave for the rest of the week. So they only
got paid?
We didn't get paid. We only got paid for that one day of that first week, and we didn't get paid for the rest of the week because we weren't called. You know, we were free to do whatever we were going to do.
Wow.
So, I mean, it was great. I mean, it's still a business. You know, they've still got to pay everybody. And, you know, when I think actor salaries, this is one of the best paid acting gigs in Chicago because it's one of the bigger theaters. I mean, the Lyric Opera pays actors more, whatever. But in, you know, traditional theaters, this is one of the most well-paying gigs. But still, it's theater money. And still, there are 35 people in the cast.
A bigger crew.
And right. And at least 2/3 that number, maybe, on the crew, and wardrobe and carpentry and fly rail and flying, you know, it's a massive production. It's by far the largest production I've ever been a part of. And fascinatingly, one of the crew, and I don't know whether she would want me to use her name, so I won't, because she's shy, and fair enough. She's a crew. I don't get out on stage. No. Anyway, she couldn't figure out why I seemed so familiar. And that my first year, we were talking about it. We were talking about, well, what else? Where else have you performed? Well, Northlight and Looking Glass. And I said, but I'm also, you know, I'm the co-artistic director of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. And she literally slapped her hands and went, that's it. When you were at the Royal George Theater in 2007, I ran sound.
Oh.
And now she's the one who hooks my cables up to my harness so I can fly.
Well, let's
Scrooge.
Talk about that. So you talk about your harness, you fly. What does that entail? Do you have to wear the harness the whole show? What's the training, you know, procedures? What are the protocols? What's it like?
Well, the training procedures are they put the harness on you and hoist you up. They hoist you up slowly in increments. The flying harness, I don't know what to compare it to. But it's literally a thing that you pull over your legs and harness up to your waist, and there are two straps that go under your thighs, and it cinches up to your waist, and there's two clips on the side, and there's another kind of harness where the straps will cross under your crotch. But I don't wear that. I think generally anybody with testicles doesn't wear that. But there are different kind of harnesses where if you want to do somersaults, that's one kind of harness. I wasn't wearing that kind of harness because I'm just going up, up vertically and horizontally. And so really it's just getting used to the heights. And what happens is Christmas passed. Take my hand, man, and hold it fast. And so we go up in the air and then vertically straight, and then we go up and off left in high up into the flies. And I thought, oh, this will be fun. So I get up there and we get off the harness. We stand on a platform or whatever, and then we fly back in. No, what happens is you fly up. And then there's a little do-si-do where we adjust our positions, where I go behind Christmas Past, because Christmas Past then has to come back in first. And that's the worst part of the entire journey, is just hanging there, not acting, waiting for your next entrance 30 feet in the air, trusting that this combination of Velcro and stitching that's holding your 100 pounds in a harness will not give way and that the cables will not give way. That's the scariest bit for me, but I'm over that now because it's been 3 years. But it's
how long are you hanging there?
I'm hanging there for maybe 30 seconds. It's not that long. Yeah. Yeah, just waiting for my next re-entrance. But it's fascinating. And this year they automated it because usually they're historically it's been people pulling ropes and it takes two people to make one person move because one person pulls the vertical rope and one person pulls the horizontal rope, and it's there's a lot of human error. You can. You know, sometimes we would fly out and my past would fly out first a little higher than me and I'd fly out too fast and slam my head into Christmas Past's hip, you know. So we wanted to cut down on that. So they automated the system this year and I thought, oh, my God, we're leaving it up to machines to control this. But it's like QLab if you run sound. You program it where you just hit the go button, but there are breaks and protocols. So weirdly, even with the automation, the cues themselves take a little slower to engage because there's a braking system that has to be engaged and then disengaged after every move. But we land on a dime. We land at the same time every place that we know. No more slamming into each other 30 feet above the flies. It's a beautiful system. And really, what a privilege. I mean, who gets to fly? You know, who gets to fly like an old man like me gets to fly?
Well, in the olden days, there was one company that did all this. I know it's not the case anymore, but it was Flying by Foy, which is people who are students of old-time show business. You know, there's the film Seven Little Foys. Eddie Foy was a vaudeville star. What's the company, or does the theater do it itself, that oversees your flying?
No, it's a company called VFX, and they got their start flying Kathy Rigby in Peter Pan.
Wow.
And so they've got people to come in. And in fact, when they automated this year, the Goodman had to find the money to do this because it's not cheap. But it's an investment in future version, you know, of the show. You amortize the costs over several years of Christmas Carol, whatever. And you save a little bit in overtime because you're not calling in to have new crew members train on the ropes. But the Goodman VFX hired one of the Goodman crew people away from the Goodman to be one of their automated people. That travels now around to various productions that VFX supervises. And it's so great. And they're so safety conscious and really great about the training. And if you're at all uncomfortable, we have all these signals we can give about stop, we've got to abort, whatever. You know, our biggest fear is eating a big meal right before and then strapping on that harness and having to wear the harness the entire act one. At intermission, I get to take off the flying harness because I'm done.
Nice. Now, are there any kids in the show, and are there special rules around the kids? How does that work?
There are. There's. Oh my gosh, I should know this. There's five kids. We call them young performers or YPs, because apparently calling them young performers is better than calling them children. But I don't know why that is. And there's one YP understudy who covers all the kids' tracks. So that's multiple tracks. And they're great. I mean, these are by and large professional kids who are terrific, who hit their marks, who I don't think maybe two of them missed a single performance out of 54 performances. They're hardy. They love it. Their parents are great. And they are also supervised by two people. So there are two YP supervisors. In fact, one of the YP supervisors from 2 years ago is now one of the ASMs on Christmas Carol and was calling the show.
Wow.
Yeah. And he's in his late 20s. He's a friend of our friend Matt Croak's daughter, Haley Croak. So
okay.
Such a small world. You know, and so that's, I mean, it's a privilege to be in this, in I guess for me, this specifically production of Christmas Carol, because there are so many different kinds of performers, ages, races, that I would never typically in a smaller production ever get to work with. But there's, and same for the kids. They don't typically get to work with grown-ups, you know, grown-up professional actors and learn from their modeled behavior on how to behave backstage in a rehearsal room. You know, we got to mind our P's and Q's a little bit. And we are given good and strict warnings about behavior and interacting with the YPs on social media and, you know, no inappropriate touching, et cetera, et cetera. Which is all very commonsensical and straightforward, but it's really fun.
What do you do when you're not on?
I do a lot of reading. I get a lot of my Folger articles written backstage. I get some rewrites of other things that we're working on written and done. But weirdly, even though I've been doing it for 3 years, just staying in the mental space of being able to just go on at the drop of a hat takes up a lot of mental bandwidth. So I really don't have the bandwidth to work on anything too substantive. For instance, you gave me some rewrites of the Christmas show of the Ultimate Christmas Show Abridged that we want to put into the published version of the script for companies that want to license the script. You did that, I think, the week before. No, you did that in early December, and I haven't had the mental brain power to even look at it. But yeah. Now I can. Now that the show's closed, I can get back to things. And I'm also looking here at my desk, going, "Look at this stack of paper that has piled up in the 10 weeks I've been involved with Christmas Carol."
Well, speaking of rewrites, does the staging or the script change from year to year?
Very little, very little. There's always the Jessica Thebus has been directing it for 4 years. She always gives a new opening to the show. In 2021, the first year, well, they canceled. There was no Christmas Carol in 2020. In 2021, it was the first Christmas Carol back, and they ended up having to cancel the final week of the run because too many of the cast members got COVID and they couldn't cover them all. But in that one, Jessica was inspired by this notion of the hearth, because remember during the pandemic, we would sit outside socially distanced in front of fires and whatever. And so it brought us back to a sort of a primal gathering around the hearth to tell a story. So that was her visual and thematic through line for that production. And that held through 2022. And then in 2023, we added a non-religious carol of peace to open the show. That reflected on Russia's invasion of the Ukraine. And this year there was a different framing device because the narrator this year was a woman, and so the woman was, it was about telling stories and gathering family together. So that was a new framing device. Also, we had a new Jacob Marley this year. So we were able to change it up in a way and change the staging, where Marley is usually just chained by, you know, wrapped in chains. Our Marley this year was wrapped in chains, but also dragging a chain that stretched off stage, like as if he was still chained to the place in hell where he was being held. And so this chain followed him around the set, and it made it the scene dynamic. It changed the staging. And in fact, one time when he says, you wear the chains, they're not as long as the chains you wear yourself. And then he reaches into my spine and basically pulls a long chain out of Scrooge's robe, which has been planted there from the beginning. And it's it really looks like it's a video game character pulling a character's spine out. It's a great moment.
Well, it sounds in several respects like an RSC show, where, you know, we come back to these year after years after a layoff, right? And you have a couple new ideas and you try them, yeah. And oftentimes you've thought about it a long time and it works. Sometimes it doesn't, but you try stuff new. And also just the thing about you coming back to it year after year. I mean, I mentioned this earlier, but you're kind of used to doing this because, you know, the America show, maybe we do every 4 years, or, you know, the original Complete Works, we come back after maybe 5 or 7 years and do it again. So you're used to brushing this up. You get, one, do you feel the RSC experience has helped you with this? And two, do you get more and more relaxed each Christmas doing Scrooge?
100% answering two first. Yes. I'm completely relaxed, and even more this year, because I got so little rehearsal time in the hall. I had to tell myself, wait, I know it. I know the show. I mean, I don't get the rehearsal time in rehearsal as the alternate, but what I do get is 10 months of letting the script percolate in my head. Like, there will be times when I can't fall asleep. I don't count sheep. I go over my lines. Mm-hmm. And that very frequently puts me to sleep. Does the RSC experience help? 100%. I mean, because the whole RSC dynamic is the three of us are each ensemble members who know how to throw focus, but each one of us knows how to take focus and step down stage center into the spotlight and deliver the thing, whatever that is. And we're used to doing it. We're used to asking ourselves the question, why this show? Why now? You know, what's different this year than it was? What's different with this new group of actors? Jessica Thebus, the director, used the image of a quilt this year, which is an existing piece of fabric that everybody contributes new things to, you know, so it changes a little bit, but it's still the fundamental piece that it always was. And also our experience as directors helps me know what to do as an actor, because I have to remember that Jessica and everybody is waiting for me to deliver. I can't be shy. I can't second guess. I just have to go out and do it, and do it 100%. And then Jessica will say, ooh, okay, maybe take the edge off of that maybe a little bit. Maybe take more of a moment here. Maybe Jessica's never had to tell me to speed it up. Never. Not once. in fact, I have taken some things fast where the stage manager has said, actually, you need to keep that at a very slow tempo, because every single other member of the cast is changing their costume right then. And
we've written stuff to cover stuff like our shows. Yeah.
We've done that. So, in fact, my last performance was two afternoons ago on the 29th, and Dee came to that and she said, so, you know, that moment where you kind of shake and shudder, after Marley pulls the chain out of your back, she said, you were doing that at maybe a 10, maybe try a 6.
No, you and I don't often get notes. I need it bigger.
Yeah, no, frequently not. But I know that as a director, I want an actor to bring it. So yeah. you can trim away
it down than to try to draw it out.
Yeah, for sure. And so, I mean, even as we speak, it's just the day after the final performance. I've still got these mutton chops that was another great gift this year, is that I didn't have to wear a wig because the new Scrooge didn't want to wear a wig. He grew his own mutton chops, used his own hair. And so I got to do the same. And we both have equally glorious mutton chops, but I have a better head of hair, which Chris has acknowledged.
Let's drop the hair talk.
Sorry. I didn't mean to trigger you.
Said the cue ball. Last question. You've done some interesting PRs I've seen on social media. What have you, did you go to the hockey game?
Yeah. Yeah. This is a PR thing that the Goodman Theater set up with the Chicago Blackhawks. And it's a thing I did 2 years ago too, where Scrooge, you know, between the second and third period, I think, they bring out guests, local celebrities, local people who got nothing else to do, come out to shoot a puck from center ice and into these three tiny little holes in front of the goal. And if you get, I don't even know what happens if you make it into the goal, because I've never come close. Actually, this year, I did it 2 years ago along with the new artistic director of the Goodman, Susan Booth, and the kid who played Tiny Tim that year. And Susan Booth got closest. I hooked it badly 2 years ago. This year, I took Matt Croak with me, in fact. This year, I got very close on my first one and shot it just wide on my next two. So I didn't make it, but I was proud of my effort. I think next year I'll have a much better go of it. And then, of course, they interview you on the ice for the whole Jumbotron and everybody else. And, you know, if I'm in costume as Ebenezer Scrooge, so even if I miss, I got the perfect, you know, punchline to the humbug. If I miss, when I miss. That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, except for one more thing, which I'll share with you in about 60 seconds, so stick around. Send us your alternates and understudies via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com or throw a comment to us over on the socials or on our own actual website, reducedshakespeare.com, or visit my website, theshakespeareans.com. Thanks, as always, to the Goodman Christmas Carol ASM's friend Haley's dad, Matthew Croak. Web services by Ginger Power Limited, music by John Weber and GarageBand, and also this week by Eric Essex. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Sarah Lishman. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Guy Roberts, Artistic Director of Prague Shakespeare Company, who Reed and I will see next week at the Shakespeare Theater Association's annual conference in San Francisco. And as always, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 943 2829th of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
I just wanted to let listeners know you had interviewed Mike McChane a few weeks ago about Red Carol. And because I live in the Bay Area, I got to go see it at Z Space, the San Francisco Mime Troupe adaptation of A Christmas Carol. And Mike McChane was so good.
I bet he was. I have no doubt.
And so grounded. And he's, you know, he started his professional career in the Bay Area. He doesn't live here anymore. But there were people in the lobby with programs from when he performed at, you know, Cal Shakes. And but anyway, I just wanted to let the listeners know that, yes, you missed a treat. And if the Mime Troupe brings it back in the future, definitely go see Red Carol if you get a chance.
Well, and Mike McChane is perfect casting for Scrooge. I mean, in a way, I feel like I played so many assholes on TV, you know, generally racist, occasionally homophobic, almost always pessimistic. That's sort of a good warm up for Ebenezer Scrooge. But also, I've had people say I was surprised at how funny your Scrooge was. But there is so much inherent comedy because there's so much pain in the story of A Christmas Carol and in Ebenezer Scrooge's journey. So I can only imagine Mike McChane being a fantastic Scrooge, because on top of being a fantastic improvisational comedian, he's an amazing, grounded actor. And what's fun for me about playing Scrooge is that I get to combine the assholes that I typically play on TV with the comedy that I get to do with the Reduced Shakespeare Company in this. And probably, you know, Scrooge might be the greatest role I've ever gotten to play for real.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less. So much less. So much less. So much less.